Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
And I'm Sophia.
And welcome to Witches Betwixt. It is gonna be one of those episodes.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
How's everybody doing? Well, it's just Jay and I today.
Yeah, we are the everybody today. Scott was feeling a little bit under the weather today, and you know, it's fine because we're going to talk about some heavy shit anyway. We've all actually to kind of, I guess, part the curtains a little bit. We have not recorded in a minute, which sometimes in a podcast format doesn't always translate because, you know, we have episodes that we pre-record ahead of time and that we have banked, and then, you know, we release them in a particular schedule, but we haven't really recorded in a long time.
Oh, yeah, man.
We really haven't.
It's been, like, since fucking, like, I don't even know if we've recorded in 2020 yet. Oh, no, we did.
No,
like,
we have.
As a response to COVID.
Yeah,
yeah, we did our actual, like, response to COVID and maybe a couple other few ones, like the kink episode and shit.
Yeah, I mean, we did the last episode that we recorded together was in June. It was about music.
Oh, right, you and Scott did one.
Yeah, it was about, I think you were in the music episode too, weren't you? Or was that just me and Scott? I think you were in that too. Yeah.
Man,
see,
between
it's
like
it's been so long, I don't even remember who was in what episode, and there's only three of us.
and so much has happened in our lives.
Yeah, it's been fucking crazy. Yeah, I mean, we'll just take this beginning part here to kind of catch you all up on what's been going on, and then we'll jump into, I guess, like our main topic of discussion, which is going to be the Tower card. Or Tower Time.
Also, life is fuck.
That too. So yeah, that's kind of where we're going for this episode. It's going to be a little bit of a catch up, a little bit of a why is the world still on fire, and what are we all doing about it? So
the world's it ain't going to stop being on fire.
It's definitely not looking that way. That's for sure. But do you want to start off with the little catch up kind of thing, or do you want me to start off with that?
I'll start.
All right.
Dramatic pause. So.
No, wait. It should be
Sophia,
bong rip for posterity.
Oh, I already did a bong rip. I mean, if y'all want, I can fucking blast another out, but I'm already so spacey.
Oh, yeah, maybe not. Then you'll be like,
I'm already at pretty, like, the lowest of low right now.
Right.
How do I even begin? Like, COVID happened, and I had an extensive period of isolation, like, really hard, not talking to people, being in a room by myself kind of isolation, and it really started to fuck me up. And my phone screen, what keeps happening is my hands can activate my phone screen without touching it, because apparently I'm the fucking avatar and I just shoot energy out of my hands. God, I'm just holding my phone and it's like, did you disconnect? I'm like, no, I like my palm is open, fuck you. Anyways, you could leave this in the call if you want. So like, yeah, COVID happened and I ended up basically hugely alone, and it kind of started getting to me, and it kind of started wearing on my relationship. And like, then the protests started happening, and like, I started getting involved on, like, you know, stuff in DKMU with like magic to help them out and help the protesters, and like sharing news sources, and everything got so busy, and I could like feel tensions mounting in Canada here, because like RCMP keep fucking killing people and other Canadian cops, and it's just nonstop here too. And so like there was blue ash in my eyes.
Oh no,
that's one of those episodes.
It is.
Yeah.
You mentioned RCMP. What's that?
Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so basically, Sophia did the thing where she gets involved with some protests and ended up going down on the street and like living there with them long term, doing protest street occupation shit, and it was wild. And it wasn't even like covered in the news out here. So I'd basically like be sitting down and giving my whole side of like everything that happened, which I don't want to turn this episode into, nor am I going to like air that on the space in the podcast or talk about it. Cause like,
if people are curious about your experience, can they message you privately?
I don't even know if I want to talk about it at this point. I'm still trying to feel about where I feel from it. Cause a lot happened. A lot happened.
That is very fair.
It upset my whole life. I ended up spending about 3 weeks on the street. I temporarily moved out of the house I was in because I no longer felt safe here with like police like coming to where I lived after I was at the protest. Because like I had been at the protest for about a week sort of thing. And I had spent about one day home that whole time. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was about 4 or 5. I can't even remember how many days it was. It was a while. And the first day I got home, there was just like cops outside my house. Like when I got back and like sat down and had a smoke outside and then stood up and looked behind me, there was like a squad car, like an SUV just sitting right there. And they were like watching me. So I got really shook and I went inside and I called people and panicked and then ended up feeling like I couldn't be at the house anymore because the cops were watching me. So I like went and lived on the street with the protest people, which was simultaneously one of the most wonderful healing and connecting experiences I've had in my life. I met some absolutely wonderful people, just some of the kindest souls. I can't tell you what it's like to actually get to spend a few weeks being like homeless. Like, and I'm lucky too, because like when the whole ordeal ended and I needed somewhere to come back to, because like everything was getting to be too much. Like my roommates were welcoming back. They were like, yeah, it's not like we kicked you out anyways. And, y'all, your stuff was here anyways. So you pretty much have to fucking come get it anyways. Yeah. So, yeah, it was one of those situations. So I came back and I'm like kind of managing where I'm going to move now because I can't live here anymore because they're moving to somewhere else. So like my housing's up in the air. And then my girlfriend and I are not dating anymore. And like I originally was thinking we needed some distance to like think about stuff and like reassess how I approach relationships. But then like some other stuff happened and then she ended up just wanting to break up. And then I wasn't very happy about that because like it was wild how little it really took for us in the end to break up, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
After how much she was like, oh, I'll be there for you. And it's like, I don't need partners to tell me they're going to be there for me through my shit. Nobody like has to be there with me when I'm going through an episode. Right. Like right. That's the hard truth of life is nobody owes me that. Right. And if my mental health is bad enough, everybody should be able to walk away and stuff. Right. And that's just how it goes. But like, it wasn't like her and I ever fought or anything ever bad happened between us. It was just like eventually
like a dissolution, like it just dissolved.
It was just like things went cold from the distance and not seeing each other and not holding each other or talking to each other. And she ended up saying she wants to break up. And like I for a while we ended up deciding to like think about it for a month, right? But then it's been over a month and we still haven't talked. And then a person who's essentially my adoptive parent died last week and I found out on Thursday. So like, it's like loss of housing stability, finding really wonderful people on the street who I can't really be around anymore and really missing all of them and not feeling like I am connected to a community anymore when I actually really had that for a little bit. And like break up with my partner. Oh, and everything. I am just so shattered right now. Like my entire plans for the future broke. The only thing that's keeping me together is like magic, DKMU, and some kind people who I still know who like really care about me and have been there for me going through this stuff, you know. But like, it's like also like right around the time where everything went wrong with me being on the street too. It was like the planetary parade where like all of the planets in the solar system just fucking line up, and you know, it goes and happens during a solar eclipse, like it's supposed to happen in like Legend of Hercules when the fucking underworld opens up, and that's exactly when my whole life fucking towers and goes so horribly wrong, and now I'm just sitting here like, what the fuck do I do? Like that person was like my parent. You know, and that was what I thought was the healthiest relationship I had ever had in my life. And it really wasn't, I'm realizing now. And I like when I was living on the street, I had a lot of my things go missing. So like I lost my rune set because someone thought it'd be fun to fuck with it and stick them under like the soles of my shoes, and they went missing and stuff. And the love letter I had from Violet for Christmas went missing as well. I don't know what happened to it. Some of my clothes and shit. So I'm like real rough. Hang on, let me just complete that with a sound bite for you. Yeah.
That sums it up.
How about you?
For me, things are it's kind of weird for me, right? So COVID I really hate saying COVID happened because it makes it sound like COVID's done, and it's very much not done. You know, it's not gone. But I guess you could say COVID quarantine and lockdown, social, you know, really strict social distancing took place in March. And so basically, you know, I ended up getting laid off from the job that I had at the real estate office. And then I ended up not going back. There's a whole fucking bunch of shenanigans. I think I ranted about it in a blog, so you can go to the website and look at that. But it was just a bunch of bullshit that went down. So basically I was just kind of existing at home for 3 months, really getting in touch with my magic and my psychic sort of abilities have really been heightened right now. So I've and for me it kind of manifests in the realm of audio. So I hear things in my house, and it's not, and I've ruled out all the logical things, you know what I mean? It's not my neighbors, it's not, you know, normal neighborhood noise. It's definitely something, you know, I would say whispers from the other side of the veil. So that's been interesting for me magically, because I've never really experienced that before, and I've always wanted to. And and I wouldn't say now that I am, I hate it, but I don't hate it, but it is very different, and it can be very taxing. So that's just sort of magically, that's kind of been what I've been dealing with. So and all that time at home, you know, like about 3 months at home, there's nowhere to go, there's nothing to do. And so what could I do other than just kind of go around the house? And part of me, in terms of other things that like other projects and stuff that I wanted to do, part of me is kicking myself a little bit, like kind of like, you had 3 months at home, like why didn't you drop a ton of weight? Why didn't you, you know, write a book? You know, why didn't you do all these things that you want to do? And I really look back on it and I'm like, yeah, I was 3 months like in limbo. Like I didn't know what was going on in the world. I knew I didn't have a job to go back to. So, you know, it's not like I was going to get recalled.
I'm just going to say this. I'm going to be real honest with you, Jay. that this you're talking like capitalism right now.
I know.
You're like, I had 3 months off. Why couldn't I have done something productive at that time? What you really had was 3 months of hiding out from a pandemic so that you and other people didn't die, and you probably haven't done the psychological processing required to actually evaluate how much of a drain that's taking on you and everyone around you. That's what is fucking everybody up with COVID right now.
Yeah.
Y'all people in the world who haven't had trauma before, who don't know how to navigate PTSD and compartmentalize, everybody's fucked up right now, like A-grade fucked up, because they don't know how to handle trauma. This is like the worst thing that's happened to a lot of people ever, right? And I'm not going to say that like one thing's worse or one thing's better, but like if you've had trauma from before and you've been coping for like 20 plus years, you have tools. You've been doing it for a long fucking time. I feel like I'm the jungle queen right now because, like, everybody else is going through trauma and freaking out and everything. And I'm over here and I'm like, I'm losing my housing. Well, not losing my housing, but my housing's destabilized. I don't have a relationship anymore. I don't have a job. I don't have all these things. But you know what I have? Me. Yeah. Motherfucker, I know, but seriously though, you ever seen the Five of Cups card?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing right now, except inverted. For those of you who don't know, I'll say it out loud or in like a visual reference sort of deal. The Five of Cups is someone looking at three cups that have been spilt over on the ground and obsessing over these three cups that they've spilt, with two cups standing up directly behind them still. And like, they're upset about how much they've lost and blah, blah, blah. But like, they still have two chalices behind them. Hang on 2 seconds. I got messaged. Sorry. Yeah, they still have two chalices behind them and they're not focusing on them at all, right?
Yeah. That's kind of me right now. And the weird thing is that COVID, the quarantining time, the lockdown time, that 3 month period plus the policies that were enacted here in the US, anyone who was collecting unemployment got an extra 600 an extra 600 week. It helped me because I had almost like, yeah, I was working, but I didn't have any money in the bank. You know, I was just living paycheck to paycheck. So
yeah,
COVID actually helped in a really fucked up way, I guess, because I was actually able to generate a little bit of a savings, which is something I haven't really had in a long time since I lost my second apartment, because I couldn't afford it anymore, because, you know, me and my partner at the time, we both lost our jobs. So that it put me in a weird position, and it put me in and it put me in a position that I've never been in before, where I had a little bit of money in the bank and I didn't. So it put me in a position where I wasn't worried about money immediately. You know, it was weird. It was weird to not worry about that. And so the only thing that I had to quote unquote worry about or think about was what I wanted to do, you know, now that, so the extra 600 expired, and I was like, okay, I got about 13 weeks left that I could claim just at the regular unemployment rate. And COVID, there's no signs of it stopping here in the U.S. I don't know how it is in Canada right now.
There's no cure and there's no immunity yet. It'll keep coming back until we beat.
No, I'm saying, like, are people being intelligent over there? Are they being just as stupid as they are here?
It depends on the person in question.
Because, like, here we have outdoor dining and bars are open. And
yeah, we do too.
It's just, it's fucking stupid. So that it was a weird thing, right? So it was like, okay, so I went through all this, you know, emotional thing with like ending this one job and then being at home for 3 months and not knowing what the fuck was going on, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, like this extra money kind of went away. And also, there's also, I was really struggling mentally with that too, because a lot of my friends were considered essential workers. And so they worked at grocery stores and stuff like that. And if you work at a grocery store in this country, you don't make a lot of fucking money, and you should be making more money. You know what I mean? Like, if you're considered fucking essential, you should be getting paid a lot more fucking money.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of animosity between not my friends, but just like the general sentiment was, you know, like with unemployment plus that extra 600 that they released, I made more money sitting at home than I did at the job that I had. And I thought that was really, it was fucked up, because it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, sure, I banked the money because I'm not going to turn it away, right? Because sure, why not? But at the same time, I was like, this is wrong. This is really fucked up. Like, these people are working every day and they're struggling and making the same amount of money. Some of them maybe got a dollar or two raised depending on the company they worked at, but that's fucking nothing, especially after taxes and all that other kind of shit. So I guess the time in quarantine, like, yeah, I got into a better position financially, but it also made me more and more increasingly pissed off at the system, the political system, the financial system, capitalism, everything, just the whole machine, the whole American machine, in which I have to exist as a part of, because it's the only way I'm going to survive within it, right? So I have to.
Yeah, I feel you.
I have to participate in it to some degree, but I also want to see it burn to the ground all at the same time. And so it's a really weird position. So anyway, so basically what I'm doing now for work, I kind of was getting to the end of that extra unemployment money, and I was like, you know what? I think I'd be a good paralegal. I've never worked in a law firm before, but just based off of my skill set and everything like that, I was like, I think I could do this job. And so I sent out a bunch of resumes, and I actually got a job as a, you know, a new paralegal. You know, I don't really know a whole lot, but I got a job as a paralegal, and that's a decided career path, and I make just as much money as I did in the other job, with a lot of room for advancement. And so in some ways, I was like, wow, this is really a come up, you know, this is good for me that I have this new path. But it's still fucked up, because I'm like, but we're still, I get my temperature taken every morning when I go into work, and I have to wear a mask all day. And, you know, it's very, everyone has their doors closed, and it's not, it just doesn't feel right. Like, it's nothing should be open. And yet we're still trying to move forward like it's not actually happening, or it's just happening in the background and it's not that big of a deal. Like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Oh, it's fine. It's like, no, it's not fine. It's really not fine. And yet we're all coming in here every day pretending like it's fine. It's just, it's the way that it's the feeling in this country right now is just like wearing a mask has become normal. If anything, I'm like, how many, you know, fashionable masks can I wear a mask that'll match my shirt today? You know, it's becoming, it's incredible what you can get used to and how quickly it takes to get used to it. And I think that is what's blowing my mind right now. Like, I'm almost getting used to living in this fucked up, semi-dystopian world, maybe, if that's,
yeah,
does that make any sense at all? Like, I don't want to live in it, right? But I'm getting used to it.
I feel like we have very different lives. Can I describe something I kind of experienced and realized for you in comparison?
We definitely do have,
like, I totally,
very different experiences.
I totally get what you're saying with that, but like, after spending like some time like literally living on the street, I got to meet a lot of homeless people and see how they live, and at some points live very similar to them. Like, when they needed water, there's only one fountain. like one fountain spot in like most of that area that I could find that had running water. Like you have to know where to go to get running water just even to drink, right? And the bathrooms are closed at night because they're worried that people are going to do drugs, as if, you know, they couldn't do drugs everywhere else.
Right.
And it's really bad because it's illegal to pee in public. If you get caught doing it, it's a sexual assault charge because it's like revealing genitalia, essentially.
Yeah.
If you like need to go number two, you're just fucked, essentially. Or you have to do some real not great stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go into great detail for y'all about what the life was like there. I mean, I had prepped for it living like in my hometown and how rough things could be, you know, with like job site life and farm life and bush life stuff. And I'm very much ready for that, oddly enough. Like I was weirdly in a good place living on the street. Cause like, here's the thing, my mental health when I was in that camp was better than I've probably been in ages. I had people I could wake up and go talk to every single day. Right. There was people I really cared about around the group. There'd be people laughing and dancing and singing. There was like community. There was like culture I connected with that like I'm from. And like, I was so happy. And here's the thing. Like I had that experience where people walked by me on the street and they'd look at me like I was homeless because I looked homeless and my clothes were dirty and I smelled and I could just basically at best wash up in the sink at the fountain place or maybe like get into the hotel if someone else had like rented it for a night, right? But like I wasn't like coming back to this place to wash up. So it's wild how people treat you when they think that you are completely beneath them. You're almost like human ammunition when you're homeless. You're a threat to everybody who has money. Don't give them money. Don't give you their time. Don't give them your time. You're going to get scammed. You better keep going to that job or you're going to wind up on the street like them. That's what you're afraid of, aren't you? If you don't go to that job, if you don't keep working at that stuff that people tell you you have to do, that you fucking hate, that you're going to have to be on the street, that you're going to be living in a tent with a sleeping bag flat on a slab of concrete, and that you're going to be asking for food from people around who can help you. And if you're lucky like me and you could get some CERB money, which is like Canadian benefit money, then you had money to spend on food and stuff and share with people. And that money didn't go as far as I thought it was going to when you're actually sharing it. And I pissed through most of it anyway. So that's how it goes. But when you get to keep those jobs, right, and you get to stay in touch with that society, you get to keep your box, you get to keep your leash, you get to keep your lease, you know, every little bit of things that you get to kind of clutter around yourself that does provide you some sort of advantage also comes alongside with other things that just really chain you down, you know, for every bit as much as it helps you to have good clothes, to have heat and to have clean water and have sanitation. Because I challenge you to live without those things, and I will let you know how quickly your socks will run out of being clean and how you can't be walking around barefoot in shoes without getting your feet infected, and then you'll get a blister from it, and then your bacteria builds up in there, and so it gets infected. Next thing you know, you go to the hospital. So you either need to have like more socks coming in all the time, you need to have running water to wash them in, or you need to have sandals. It's like a struggle just to even not like end up sick just from like sanitation on your feet, right? Like that's a really big thing I learned. And those little things that you take for granted become so big, but also the things that you're afraid of become so little, right? Like seeing how people could come together to live in a community on the street if they so choose to, could really actually work, was really revolutionary to me. And seeing how you could talk people down from violence or harm with actual genuine human compassion was amazing. And I saw how much people judge you by how they look. If I could retreat to like a washroom and clean up and like say put on deodorant, do makeup, suddenly anybody would talk to me. You could have a person in a suit who'd look at me as I walk down the street and I'm desirable. I can't tell you what it's like. I feel like I'm such a shapeshifter. I've had people just look at me like I'm the absolute human filth of the world and homeless. And I've had people look at me like I'm the absolute apple of their eye simply by what I wear and how I look. And who they think of me as a human being is almost always entirely dependent on how I appear. And almost everything that you could judge off of me by my appearance will actually tell you next to nothing about who I am as a human being. You won't actually get to see any of those things unless you like come inside, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I kind of think about that on the opposite end of things too. You know what I mean? So you take like your average downtown business district, you know, and there's people in suits walking by, women in beautiful dresses, how, you know, that scene. We've all seen it in every movie and every show. And just as there's, you know, this idea that, you know, you look at someone who's homeless or just sitting there on the street, they're dirty, they're smelly, they're this, they're that. And, you know, there's a sort of reaction, the reaction that we all expect, you know, oh, ew, gross, or stay away, just keep your distance, that kind of thing. But I also think about, because like I work now in the very center of Philadelphia. So I work right across from City Hall. And so there's everyone there. We have the lowest of the low and the highest of the high all in one place. And all I do is I observe. And I soak it all in, because I look at the people in these suits and in these really expensive things, or maybe things that look expensive that actually aren't expensive. You know what I mean? Because that's also a thing too. And I really wonder about these people. Like, when they go home, what do they like? Do they wish they had something else? Do they envy maybe the homeless person on the street because that person is free in a way that they are not free? And you know,
how could they envy us, or well, me, because I'm not homeless anymore, but like, or I don't even know if I truly was, but I certainly had the feeling of being it. But how could they really want to be homeless? It's not necessarily free.
It's not, I guess I'm trying to explain like how I take in the city, because like I am stuck in the American capitalist machine currently, and I think as long as I live in this country, I don't think I'll ever be able to get away from it, because I need a way to make money so I have a way to live, right? To live the life that I want to live, which is I want to have a roof over my head, and I want to have running water, and I want to have clothes. Right? So I want to have clean things, and that's what I want for myself. But all at the same time, I have these moments where I'm like, I want to throw it all away and just go anywhere and just live anywhere other than here. And not live like in a house or an apartment, but just live, I don't know, in a hut, in a cabin, under a rock, in a cave. Like, I have these moments where I feel like I'm not free. Like, I feel, I see. You know what I'm saying? So
I'll say this in response to that. You're always trading one leash for another in this world.
Yeah.
Now, if we didn't exist in a world where we had nation states that treated humans like property, this might be a different situation. Yeah. But when you live in a house, you are tethered by the contract of living in said house, right? And when you live on the street, you're tethered to the law of the street, you know? Right. If you're being disrespectful to people, if you're stealing from people and upsetting them, if you're doing upsetting things, like, you will have a cause and effect that claps back on you, you know? There's very hard, almost even animal laws, you know, where, like, you need to learn what kind of body language is safe to see in a person, what type of body language immediately lets you know, like, you need to know the art of fear and, like, what your body is telling you, you know, and, like, where to do certain things. And, like, you just live under a different set of laws. So when you live under the set of societal laws that we're in now, and you could call the box life or the cubicle life almost, because everything's in a fucking box when you're living in the colonized world. You are set under the contractual obligation of selling off your existence to another being or entity in exchange for a set value that will vary, so that you can transfer that for a frictionless existence in society. And I know that sounds really complicated way of saying a very simple thing, but that's what it is. You sell your time to be alive in the world that you have here, and this world exists at the cost of the other worlds, which would be the natural world, like nature, because all of this comes from resource extraction, right? When you're taking oil out of the ground, when you're taking mineral out of the ground, when you're cutting down trees and not putting them back, you know, all of these things add up. And if you look at places like Europe, where, I don't know, there's not much nature left, is there? And there's not really any animals, is there? All they do is take their wealth from elsewhere. You know, the crown steals as much as they want from Canada and America and South America, and they just keep taking and taking and taking and taking, and it's never enough, and it gets chopped up and built, shipped out, sent again, and consumed, and then disposed of, and then clogged into the ocean, and everything just keeps going in this world that's so hollow and superficial, simply because we lack close connection with other people, is like literally destroying everything else on the planet because of it, right? And I'm not going to be that person who sits here and blames our phones. In fact, I think phones are a solution, not a problem. That's why we connect so much through them, right? Like, when people are on their phones, they're talking to people they love, right? They're having, like, messages with their partners, or, like, video chats with people, or, like, looking for jobs and, like, living their fucking lives, you know?
Yeah, very.
Like, if anything that we do, we're constantly facilitating connection through technology, right? Yeah,
very rarely. You know, it's funny. I actually had, like, this conversation with my sister through text, funnily enough, earlier today. I had like a similar kind of conversation. So I had found this screenshot of a Twitter post basically saying, like, you know, why is it that you know, why can't I balance working 40 hours a week, working out enough, eating healthy enough, cooking dinner at home, and, you know, keeping my place clean? Like, why can't I seem to balance this? Why is one always sacrificed for the other? And someone had replied and said, you know, well, this is it's a construct of this antiquated system of, it's basically like a single person can't do all of that. Realistically, they can't balance all of that, because it's designed for you to have a partner, a live-in partner at home, and that live-in partner takes care of the cooking and cleaning.
I'm gonna be really honest with you. Society really feels like a residential school. I'm not sure how much people are familiar with, like, Native American history in North America, but, like, residential schools were essentially where they took Indigenous people and stole them away from their families and forced them to study a culture they didn't want, like, basically beat them and did horrible things to break them and steal their spirit from them, essentially. And break them and turn them into white people, essentially. Not like white people in the as in like the color of their skin, but as in like the societal construct of colonialism, right? And it really feels that, like, The other extension of that is a training school, I do believe. And it really feels like that's what society is. Like a residential school is a very hyper-focusing of like what society does just collapsed into an extremely dense time frame, right? It's meant to break the individual. They treat you as poorly as possible for as long as they can so that you give in to the depravity of it all. They want you to feel like it's hopeless. They want you to feel like there's nothing you can do. They want you to be angry and to be upset so that you do something stupid about it too.
Yeah. And for me, I feel like I kind of exist in this weird in between, right? Because it's like I recognize, and I say this a lot, like I'm very self-aware. I'm very aware of the system that I'm in. I'm very aware of my sort of place in the machine, right? But so back to what I was saying earlier with my sister. So she was saying to me, and my sister's very different than me in a lot of ways. She's, if anything, she's got the cushier life than I do. She definitely has way more money and also just more privileges that money allows her. So she had said, she was like, well, I think the problem why people can't, you know, balance all these things, you know, the work week and the cleaning their house and keeping all this together, because I think the reason why people can't do that or you can't do that is because of the internet. And I was like, well, I don't really know what you mean by that. And she's like, oh, you know, like
stupid as shit.
She was like, you know, just like the aimless scrolling, the streaming. And I was like, honestly, like
you mean dissociation and PTSD response?
Not so much that. I think it was just like the idea of just like consuming media.
That's what I'm saying, though, that is like half the time that we doom scroll, it's like a response to the fact that like society is so fucking intense, right?
Yeah, like you
not
just
to say every interaction on like checking your feed is like that, but like 2020 sure as shit has been, you know?
Right. And sometimes social media, the internet at large, is a source of that bullshit, and that's the reason why I flip my phone over and I ignore it for a couple hours. So I was saying to her, I was like, you know, I can honestly say that I do not spend a lot of time aimlessly, mindlessly scrolling around social media and the internet at large. I really don't. If I'm on my phone, I'm answering a message, I'm responding to an email, I'm researching a question, you know, like I'm using it as the tool that it's supposed to be. And do I browse aimlessly? Yes, but not as often as a lot of people think. Like I really don't. And people can say I'm terrible sometimes about getting back to people, like when they text me. Or people will call me and I'll be like, oh, I'll forget about it for like a whole day. And I'm like, oh, shit, I was supposed to call you back. Because sometimes I just disconnect because it's too much. I want to use it for what it's intended. You know, I just want to use it for as a tool. I don't want to use it to, I don't know, to. So it often doesn't make me feel better. You know what I mean? Like to just
you
do
say
that.
Use it as intended, but like how it's intended is however the hell you want it to.
Right. I mean, use it as intended for my purposes. So
okay, perfect.
Yeah. So and my sister isn't involved in a lot of extra things like I do. So when I come home from work, my usual like I'll get home around 5 or 6, depending what time I leave. And, you know, I'm like, all right, I'm going to put in, you know, like house chores and stuff like that, whatever I can squeeze in. But then it's also like work on podcast stuff, edit a podcast, do social media posts, do some research for this. Pagan Pride stuff, that's happening right now. We're doing a virtual event. I also write, so I work on my stories. So I do a lot of stuff. And even Joyce can attest to this because a lot of times Joyce will be sleeping when I come home because Joyce has been working a lot of overnight shifts. And I will not have the TV on. I won't be watching. I don't come home from work, sit on the couch and put on my show and watch my shows until I go to bed. Like, no, I come home, I go on the computer and I work. I work on the things that I want to work on because I put my time in in the capitalist machine, okay? And then they're going to pay me my money for my time so I can afford the things that I have. And so that way I can then use my other time that I have, which I have less of, and give back to society. So I feel like I really toe the line between, like, I don't know if anyone, see, there are just people in this world that I think genuinely like capitalism. They genuinely like the fact that I work for this company, they pay me money, and I go on vacation, and I watch my Disney Plus, and I'm happy. And it's like, okay, if that's what makes you happy, fine, but do you realize how broken that system is, though? Like, do you realize how inherently bad it is? And how much it's falling the fuck apart right now?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't even think that anybody's truly happy with it. Like, I can't say for sure that they aren't,
yeah,
right?
It's
like,
hard.
Here's what actually what I want to say. Here's what I'm going to say. You can find happiness within whatever it is that brings you joy. So, like, I know, like, for example, my dad, he truly finds joy in the fact that he's a carpenter, that he gets to build stuff and provide services for people, right? And he also very much found that a similar joy in being a first responder firefighter, and he'd, like, go save lives and do shit, you know? Like, that was his thing, and I don't think that necessarily capitalism as a construct is going to be fulfilling. It by design cannot be, right? It seeks to rob you of everything that is fulfilling and supplant it with something that comes at a monetary cost, right? So if you don't have that closeness of social connection, then maybe go buy these clothes that will certainly help you be more desirable. What's that? The clothes didn't do the thing? Oh, you just need to learn how to talk to them, right? Here, come and do this and do this and do this and do this and then you'll be good enough, you know? And it's not going to, as a system, truly provide any source of relief for anybody. Now, capitalism is not the same thing as, say, doing a job. If you have a world that doesn't exist with capitalism, you'll still have people who need to sew clothes. You'll still have people who need to grow food. You'll still have people who drive buses. Capitalism is a way of thinking. It's a way of living beyond just like a monetary value. The biggest thing that makes capitalism capitalism is the illusion of separation. The fact that you think that you're just you. You're not the land. You're not the sky. You're not the animals that you're eating. You're not the buildings you're walking by. Nothing's connected. Nothing has energy. Nothing is sacred. Nothing has spirit. It's all just shit. It's all bad, and you might as well just be mad about it. When in reality, everything is fucking amazing and wonderful and connected and beautiful and alive and just like so trying to reach out to us in our like state of sadness and looking in at ourselves and thinking it's all about us when like the entire universe is screaming, we've been here all along, you know? And you're not going to like just destroy the world because we don't have rulers anymore in the exchange of currency for like basic services that put people on top of other people. But you're still going to have people putting out fires. You're still going to have people inventing stuff and putting in drains to make sure the water flows right and cleaning up the garbage and helping the hurt and going out and living life. All of the things that really make us happy and bring us joy will be in the world after on the other side of capitalism as well. It isn't necessarily like something that's intrinsic to life. It's just that's how it works. The virus takes everything that you love and makes you think that it is the origin of all of it when it has nothing to do with it. It's just stolen everything that you ever had and told you it made it. It's the false god, you know?
Yeah. And I think right now what we're starting to see is the beginning of the collapse of these systems that have
don't say that.
carried us for so long. Maybe not a collapse, right. Maybe a slow dismantling of it. I don't know how it's going to go just, down.
You say the collapse, but there was a song I was listening to earlier today that's very synchronistic, and that's the word, the collapse.
Yeah, and that real. I mean, we've kind of been talking about, you know, really the tower card this whole time, but that really does kind of bring us into the main focus of what we're trying to drive at here, is that you had mentioned, Sophia, that you really wanted to talk about the tower card and how it relates to right now, how it relates to society, how it relates to everything that's going on. And I recently read Byron Ballard's book specifically about Tower Time, which is named after the Tower card in the Rider-Waite Tarot, and essentially Tower Time is the time in which it is a collapse of these systems. It may not be something that is completely broken down and rebuilt in our lifetime, but the seeds of those movements are definitely there right now, because people, especially I truly believe, especially with COVID and how it was handled by all of these capitalist machines, people are pissed. Like, I know there's a lot of media focus and attention right now on anti-mask people and, you know, just those fucking people. I'm just gonna call them those fucking people, right? So there's a lot of media focus on those fucking people, but there's not enough focus on the people that are actually doing their part, and they're seeing how fucked up it all is. Like, the fact that they want to send kids back to school. Why do you want to send kids back to school? So you can indoctrinate them into the system. They need to learn. So I feel like they're truly afraid that if we don't send our kids back to school, so it's a multi-part system, right? So if you don't send our kids back to school, then the parents aren't as available for work, so they can be, you know, do their part in the machine, right? Then the other part of it is that, well, where do kids learn all of this indoctrination, fucking capitalist bullshit? School. They don't really get it as direct if it's from home or from a distance learning or alternative sort of learning. And because that's all this country does. And I went to public school in this country, so I can tell you firsthand that that's what it does. It just, they push you through the system so they can get you into the workforce, and they can just suck it out of you, and then they want you to create babies, so that way, you know, it's a disgusting, vicious cycle that does not focus on humans. It focuses on product. It focuses on material, and it's not people focused.
I actually would like to say one thing. Yes, it is. It's simply that they think that people are all those things that you just said. Materials, resources. Well, yeah,
like, they look at people not as people. They look at people as product. They look at people as resources. They look like it's not... People are just seen as people. People are not seen as humans. You know what I mean? Like, they're not seen as each individual person,
human livestock,
right? It's like cattle. Like, humans are no different from cattle.
You literally, okay, so I'm gonna go off on a little tangent here. Yeah, everybody who's been all like, oh, the mark of the beast is coming and they're gonna inject us with a microchip, let me just say some shit to y'all.
Or the 5G SIN number, fucking
if people. You're in Canada, just listen to this. If you're in Canada, you have a SIN number, okay? Your SIN number is a 9-digit code that is already like a barcode. Guess what? You had one since birth, and you've already been using it if you've ever accessed any fucking service in the country. Same for America.
Yep.
It's called a social security number. It is actually tied to a stock value. You are literally used on the stock market as human capital for your fucking country and lot in buying and selling power, okay? Mm-hmm. And to top it all off, hang on, I'm having a brain fart. Don't talk about this part. Let me think on its top spot. Where is it going with this? Right. Your phone. If the government wanted fucking microchips, dude, you have a microphone on your phone. in a camera, in precise GPS coordinates at all times, and you have access to applications like Facebook, which you literally just hit yes to when it's asking you, can I have these permissions, and you don't even know what you're hitting yes to, and you literally are letting it just access your microphone and listen to you. I'm not even kidding. You go ahead and read that shit. Go ahead and actually look at your permissions. It, like, your phones are literally listening to your fucking conversations. There's a reason why when you're talking to your friends about going to eat at King Taco and you open up Google and you type in taco, you get King fucking Taco because you were just saying it and your phone's literally listening to you because that's how it works, man. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not crazy. No. I like literally live with a person who works in like programming the internet. This is how algorithms work. If you think this is crazy, then holy shit, read a fucking blog post or something, because
honestly, you don't even need to read blog posts. All you have to do is just pay the fuck attention. There have been multiple times where I have just been talking about I think the one time I was talking to Joyce, it was the most bizarre thing. I was talking about the Bible, of all things. I forget how the fuck we got started on it, because Joyce went to Catholic school, so I like to grill them with questions sometimes about, you know, what that was like. And so I believe we were talking about the Bible and what fucking targeted ads, and I didn't look up anything. I looked up nothing on my phone when we were talking about the Bible. And the next day I was, you know, looking through Facebook, catching up, seeing what people are up to, laughing at the memes, as we do. And what do I see but targeted ads for Bible study? So,
Jesus,
you mean to tell me? And here's the thing, is I'm like, oh, they're listening. And you know what? Here's the thing. And I hate when people are like, oh, especially, did you hear about this? I don't know if you see any headlines about how people are like, oh, TikTok is some Chinese spyware or some bullshit like that. I'm like, okay. So TikTok's collecting your information. Well, so's Facebook. So's Twitter. So's Instagram. So's every fucking app on your phone. Every single one, your computer, your web browser, it's all collecting information about you. Anything that these people, these systems, this whatever, these algorithms, anything they want to know about you, they already know. And so in a way, like, you would think that, like, in a way you would think that that would feel oppressive, right? But for me, it's like freeing in a weird way, because it's like, okay, what else you got? You already know everything about me, so what? What does that mean? What does that do for you? What does that do for me? You know what I mean? Like, if the government barged into my house right now and was like, you run a witchcraft podcast, I'd be like, yep. And, you know, it's just like, it's like, okay. It's almost like,
It wouldn't go that way, Jay.
I know, but I'm just saying, is like,
it would be more like, get your hands on your effing head.
I know, it would be like that.
You and you'd be panicking and you'd be a lot more scared, trust me.
No, but I'm just saying, like, in the sense of, like, if someone, like, reveals, if these things are revealed about you, right, something like, oh, Jay does this, and that, it's like, okay, yes, I do, but you already knew that, so what does it matter? Like, why does it matter? I guess is the question, when people are like, oh, they're getting our information, that they're getting our information. It's like, okay, so you're posting on your Facebook page about how Twitter's stealing your information, but Facebook's also stealing your information. So is one worse than the other? I don't see how that equals out. Or people are posting on Facebook and Twitter how TikTok is stealing their information. And I'm like, okay, well, Facebook and Twitter are also stealing your information. So it's like, your information is all bullshit anyway. You know, none of it is actually important. In the grand scheme of things, what's actually important is your own self-worth, your own mind. Who cares if they know what your interests are? Who cares if they know what your fucking porn history is? Who fucking cares? They can't take away who you are intrinsically. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can't take away your identity, yourself. They can't take that from you. They can't take your humanity.
I mean, I really don't want to disagree with that, because at the core of my heart, I say, yes, nobody can take your humanity from you. You will all always intrinsically be a human being and have worth and have value. But just like, I've seen the dark side of society now, like, and I haven't even gone nearly as deep as it goes. But
I'm
just
not talking
like
about the deep stuff. I'm talking about your average everyday person.
No, the deep side of society, not the South.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not talking about like the dark underbelly of society. I'm talking about the average person. The average person.
No, no, no. When you're saying like the government can't take your humanity away from you, right?
Yeah.
Matt, Jay, when we were at these protests, they were like flying helicopters over us at nighttime and like sending people to harass us at nighttime. And like, I can't even get into the type of shit that happened. But, I assure you, it will rattle you to your core, and how much the establishment will work to rob you of your humanity, especially if you're not white, especially if you're any minority, especially if you're black, especially if you're indigenous, especially if you're trans. I could go on.
No, I'm
sure
not
we all
discounting
know this.
That. Like, I'm not discounting the horrible shit that happens, the horrible shit that people do to other people. But I just can't stand
you.
Your average, everyday fucking Karen and Chad being like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, people are stealing your information. Oh, the Chinese are doing this.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm talking about fucking your everyday fucking white people.
Yeah.
Like, shut the
it's just,
fuck
there's
up.
Such, it, there's such... I feel that hard. It's just there's such a dual side to it, though, because like on one side, for all the Karens who are complaining about it, right, there are really like, say, like protest groups who just want to peacefully protest, who like get super spied on by the government, and like crazy shit happens just because people aren't happy with how their lives are and they want to be able to like exercise their literal rights to go protest, you know. And like the amount that groups like Black Lives Matter get fucked with over stuff is unbelievable.
And that's what I'm saying is these fucking people, and they're masked. Like, these people, they're masked in society because they pretend like they care. They say shit like, I don't see color. And,
oh my god.
Right, and they say this shit and they're like, I have black friends, I have insert people of color group, minority group here, friends, right? You know, my coworker's Asian. It's like, shut up. Shut up.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
You know, it's just like, no one...
Oh, we hired a lesbian couple.
Right.
Wow, that makes you, last time I checked, a human being with bare minimum levels of acceptance. Thank you, I suppose. I should thank you for not doing a discrimination.
Right, like, oh, my best friend in high school was gay. Okay. You want a fucking award? Like, you want a fucking parade? Like, is that what you want? And I think
that's... it's better than them calling the cops on you for walking a dog.
Right, and that's what I'm saying, is like, these are the same people that say, I have gay friends, I have black friends, I love all people, blah, 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 and they are the same people that say, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization, Antifa is a terrorist organization, Antifa
is something.
Not even a fucking organization, it just means anti-fascist.
I'll tell you something here. You want to hear some real shit? Hmm. When you're camping out on the street, and people who aren't homeless, say, like when you're in a park especially, because that's when they get pissed off. If you're on like, say, a concrete street or a back alley, they ignore you and they're like weirded up. But if you're in a park, you're inconveniencing them, because that's like a their park that they walk through or whatever, right? So like, they'll get confrontational with you and be like, you staying out here, you camping? And you'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, were you using the washroom? And you'll be like, excuse me? And they'll like straight up get confrontational with you,
like,
over,
why do
like
you fucking care?
Because they want to make sure that you're not shitting in the woods like an animal. Meanwhile, their dog is taking a shit on the grass and they're not cleaning it up.
Right.
And their dog is allowed to piss and shit wherever they want. And you literally will dehumanize other people who don't even have homes and access to clean sanitation, as if what, they're supposed to go somewhere else and that'll make it better? As if that'll solve the problem?
Right. Like, what would make it better for them? You know what I mean? And what would make it better for them is complete erasure. They just erase. And that's why they all have this filter. I feel like they all walk around with these weird fucking contact lenses in that just filter.
But just
out.
Like that that juxtaposition though of like simultaneously asking like people who are camping and not like staying in houses where they're using the washroom,
right,
and not even cleaning up after your fucking dog.
Right. It's like, who the fuck are you?
But that's so common. That's more common than like you will ever possibly expect.
And I think that is where the main source of my rage comes from. Like, don't get me wrong, the police brutality is horrendous, and it should not be the way it is.
Police brutality is enabled because of all of these things that we're talking about,
right,
though, right?
Because
like,
if
every single person wasn't passive, if they weren't silent, if they were actually upset and were fucking filming cops and doing something when stuff was going down, and there was a real understanding of like whose side cops are on, then it'd be different. But
right.
When
and ultimately,
you're the one who's standing up for yourself when you're getting harassed and you're the only one, pretty quick you look like you're fucking crazy.
Exactly. And like, I am a white person, and I do have and acknowledge my white privilege 1000%. I will never say that I don't have white privilege because I'm white. I get it. However, I have been in situations where my queerness has been an issue, right? So there's that part of it too. So I've been in situations where I have felt unsafe, where I was crossing the street the other day. I was crossing the street a couple blocks from my house, and I saw this car coming, and I was like, okay, I have enough time, you know, to get across the street. And he sped up. And so I had to like hustle across the street. And as I safely got to the other side of the street, as he zoomed by, he yelled, "Faggot," out the window. And
Jesus.
So, right. So my visible queerness put me in a line of danger. So really, it wasn't about race in that instance. It was just about how people perceived if I was gay or queer or not, right? And so there are so many people that just, I think the real danger is the masses. That's the real problem. But
I wouldn't even say it's the masses. The masses aren't the problem.
Well, the people
danger,
that go along with the people that are so
the masses
blind to
are
it.
Actually, I'll tell you a secret. The masses are actually pretty all right. Like, when you get out into the street, most people are actually pretty fucking great. The problem is that we're so isolated from each other that we don't even get to talk to each other. The reason that so many people hate queers is because they never got to grow up around us and see how fucking wonderful we are. Like, do you know how many of those people would probably love us if, like,
but they, probably
they were to
have.
See how much we could care for them?
But that's the thing.
Pardon?
Is they have grown up around us. They have seen us. We've been here all along. We've always been here.
I mean, there's a difference, though, between, like, us just simply existing in society and us existing in a close context in their life, right? Like, I'm not going to lie. I've had people, like, literally come up to me and been like, you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I had some pretty shitty thoughts about, like, trans people before, but, like, meeting you has really opened my eyes. So thank you. Like, I've had those kinds of conversations with people, and that just, like, being a real person and showing them kindness has completely like broken down that barrier and humanized such an impossibly like wide divide, you know? Like it's some real fucking miraculous shit can happen in healing and connection between human beings when you really provide space for everyone to actually like be a fucking human being and be forgiven and like learn and move on together and like make the world a good fucking place. Like I got to see some real radical love and forgiveness going on, and like I I don't know. I kind of have hope, you know. I don't think it's the masses at all. I think that it's angry people who are upset at how society is, sure. And almost everybody's upset at society because almost nobody's getting a good deal aside from the rich. But we're all just trying to find a better way of living, you know? Even the people who are angry, they're angry because their shit ain't in the good place, right? You really think Bezos is angry?
No, of course not. There's nothing to be
exactly
angry about.
Everybody who's fighting over something doesn't have enough, right? And I'm gonna go ahead and like talk about my background. I am Métis Cree. Sometimes I am a little bit on the darker side because like Native people can be literally bleach white because Native isn't a skin tone. That's a huge misconception. There's Native people of all shapes, sizes, and colors. There's Black Native people. There's like white Native people. There's brown Native people. There's fucking ask somebody. Don't assume, you know. That said, I do have light Native privilege. Yeah, my skin does get darker than some Natives, absolutely, for sure. I'm like on the scale of spectrum of how dark I get, I'm probably like a 33% at average. I could probably get like maybe 45 if I'm pushing her, you know. I'm not gonna get that dark. And I will get certain times where like people will notice that I have gotten a lot of sun and I might get some discrimination occasionally. That does happen. However, I will acknowledge that statistically, when I am working indoors, like I have been for the past 6 years, I will look exactly like a white person because how my skin looks is exactly in response to how much sun I'm getting, right? So that doesn't change like how my life was and how my family was and like what it's like being Métis and like growing up in all the different parts of Canada and like the experiences I have. But it also like it's almost like a racial spectrum, you know? Like there's, as a mixed race person, I do have that kind of stuff, right? Because like Métis is mixed. I'm like, it's the result of colonialism, right? Like I'm the offshoot of white people, specifically French people and Native people. So like Cree people. So like I exist as a mixed race person, right? And sometimes I fit into white spaces, most of the times I don't, and sometimes I fit into other spaces and most of the times I don't. I'm usually most comfortable around other Native people. Like it's just like being in the right place all the time, you know. We're laughing about the same stuff, we're talking about the same stuff, we're on the same level. It's great, you know. Like a lot of the, I didn't even realize how much of the like real fucking problems in my life came from just like not being around other Native people, honestly, because like my family is extremely Native, I realized too, like my dad specifically, right? So It's been an experience because like I grew up really separated from that culture, really separated. And I got teachings from him that were like, I realized really veiled because when I was on the street, I was spending time with a lot of other Indigenous people and learning stuff from them. I learned how much like my dad didn't even know that he was passing on, right? Like how much he would always talk about respect the elders and respect your grandparents. And I never said a swear word in front of my grandpa or grandma as long as I lived. And like, there was like a lot of things that really got passed down, you know. And like hearing other people talk about their culture and sharing has really helped me fill in pieces to realize stuff and like be, and just even little things like body language or eye contact or like tone of voice and like everything. And like it all kind of like came together finally, and I'm like really starting to have this whole identity of myself rather than like trying to find those pieces, which is really nice to finally have that at the age of fucking 30, going on 31. But definitely not just a white, not just a white girl over here, you know.
So were you raised with the notion that because you are white, or you look white to, you know, you look white, Were you raised with the notion that you were inherently better than non-white people?
No. In fact, it was explicitly never talked about because they don't want you to think about your race. So when they asked us about, like, say, when we were young, we'd do school reports on, like, where your family came from. And I'd ask my family where we came from. And they just say, oh, you come from a long line of Canadians. And they just leave it at that every time. And I could never get more information on them, right? And there was always like this deliberate vagueness. And my dad tried to tell me one time. And then I was like, what? And then he was like, I shouldn't have said anything. And just shut his mouth and never said anything after that, right? And it was actually like a Métis group leader in Fruitvale who told me, oh, you ain't fucking white. You're just as dark as I am. Look at yourself. One day. So like it's I was never truly raised white. Like I was like literally just like running around barefoot in the woods half the time as a kid. Like my backyard went right into a swamp and into a forest, and that was where I played, right? And like when my family had fights, I would like go and sit in the field and just like chill out and smoke. And like I like very much lived in like nature, you know. And like between that and like my grandparents on the prairies and like them teaching me to trap and kill animals for like pay when I was like under the age of 10 and like getting put in the trades as a teenager, like every fucking working class guy does in my family, you know. Like my dad was working trades when he was a teenager. My brother got put in the trades when he was a fucking 13 because he like got arrested for smoking weed at high school. Like the more that I go into it, the more it's just like the most Métis story ever, right? But you're not raised necessarily knowing that you're like Métis, and they try and like they don't necessarily tell you you're white, but they won't tell you you're not white. And my dad would always have these times where he'd be like, the white man does this and the native man does this. And he wouldn't even tell me where he has this knowledge from. He'd be like, a white man builds a big fire and stands away and has a cold back, but a native man builds a small fire, stays close and is warm all around. Or like, the white man digs a hole and throws his dirt far away, and the native man places his dirt right next to the hole's edge so he can fill it in with ease. Like little things like that. And I was like, what the fuck, when I actually looked at it afterwards, right? So it's like weird. It's like this coded kind of mosaic that you don't start noticing until you get further down the line, right?
See, I was raised very opposite of that. So I actually found out my actual ancestry is like Irish, English, Scottish. So, you know, no surprise there of where my heritage is. So very white. But growing up, so I grew up in the city. I went to public school. So it's a modge podge of people. You got people from all colors, all races, all religions, everything in the schools that I went to. And yet, my dad freely used the N-word at dinner.
Ugh.
He told us that the world is run by the white man.
I mean, he's not wrong. Right. It is straight up run by the white man.
The world is run by the white man, and you as a white person are pretty much entitled to whatever the fuck you want because you're white. I know, this is going to be hard shit to hear, and I'm sorry for anyone who has to hear this, but this is...
I'm just going to mute. I'm going to mute and rip a bong toe.
So it was, it was... You're white, and the world is yours, and you don't want to be like those people. See what those people do? Don't be like those people. Those people being anyone who is not white. And we were not allowed to have... non-white friends, even though we went to public school. So the odds of finding a white friend were much lower because it was a melting pot of so many different people.
No, actually, my dad was quite deliberately opposite of that. So here's the thing. As Métis people, there was really a bias against people who are visibly native, is who my dad and uncles would be racist against until like I made them break that stereotype when they were older. But my dad was always like way almost out of his way kind to other like people of color. Like, there was very few black people in the town that I grew up in, right? And one of the guys who was living in the town, his name was Garrett, and he had come from Belize, and he was like best fucking buds with my dad. Like, he couldn't get a job because people were being shit. And my dad has a rule. He doesn't judge you by how you look. He judges you by how you treat him, because that's how we do, right? That's like how my, that's a rule of the fucking family, right? And Gareth is a good guy, and he worked hard, and my dad got along great with him. So like he worked, Gareth worked for him for like a good 5 or 6 years, and he built a whole fucking life. And like my dad gave a lot of chances to a lot of people who had rough situations. Like, he's gone out of his way to hire homeless people who didn't actually have like a solid address before and stuff. Like, he's helped out people who had debt and stuff just to like give him a chance to pick them up. He's like a legit decent guy, even though he's like had some really fucked up stuff going on. So like, he's never been the type of person to look down his nose at somebody who's legitimately trying to do the best with what they got. He looks down his nose at people who squander the kindness shown to them, people who won't work for their own place in the world. He is a little bit ableist. I'm definitely going to give him that, idle hands or the devil's work, you know, that kind of shit, right? So like, work is my dad's, is like a big part of Métis culture.
Same with my dad.
That's like what my dad does. That's what Dean does. That's what my grandpa did, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was always very much, you know, blue collar, work hard, that kind of thing. But it always comes with this caveat of, well, because you're white. It was literally, my childhood was literally white is right. And it's fucking disgusting. And I still, to this day, so he's gotten somewhat better, but not really. So I think what it is now is he just shuts the fuck up, because now I'm an adult and I can say, shut the fuck up, you know? And yeah. I don't feed into it anymore. Like, before, I had to listen, and he would go on rants. He would go on fucking rants, and I... just he berated my sister at one point for having believe it or not, a Russian friend. Girl was white as hell, but she was Russian, so that was bad. So I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, there was no winning. And I stopped bringing any friends to my house. I had a Muslim friend from Pakistan. I had a half, whatever. I'm not going to sit here and list all my people of color friends, whatever. But I had a total, they were just my friends, you know, like, and that's just all it was to me. And I am so happy that I did not turn out like him. Like, it could have happened. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that I had enough, whatever it is in my brain and my upbringing and whatever the fuck it was, to make me not like that. Because I think about that, and I feel terrified that I could have ended up like that. I could be one of these people out here not wearing a mask voting for Trump, you know? Like, it's just it's fucking terrifying that I could have been that. And I also and I think about how they say, like, for example, my parents moved to Florida, right? So they retired, they moved to Florida. And my mom said to me, she goes, and keep in mind, they're in suburban Florida. So they are in, you know, they're not in a city anymore. So they're in a suburb in Florida. And my mom said to me, she goes, the black people here aren't like the black people in Philly. And I said, Mom, I'm going to need you to just stop right there and think about what you're saying. Just think about it. She's like, well, you know what I mean. I was like, no, think about what you're saying. Analyze your thoughts here, because that's fucked up. And And she kind of came around. She's like, I guess you're right. You know, it's just, it's hard. It's really, really fucking hard. I don't think that people like that can ever, I don't think like before they die, I don't think they will ever change. I don't think they will ever, quote unquote, you know, see the light, have their fucking come to Jesus moment or whatever. I don't think that's going to happen.
You know, I'm going to say some shit. As somebody who's white passing most of the time, a significant majority of the time, I'm going to try and think of all of the people of color who have hurt me. Let me think. I think it's probably precisely one.
Yep, same for me. It's one.
And it happened in exactly this. We were fighting. We weren't actually like fist fighting. Mm-hmm. We were sparring, right? Because that's what like dudes do it at mm-hmm. at parties, right? And he'd been drinking, and I had beat him in every sparring match we had had, right? And he was like getting mad, right? Because I beat him hands down in a row every single time, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was like done, and I was like, all right, dude, that's enough for me. I'm gonna call her here. And I like turned and walked away, and he decked me in the head and like ran his thumb through my eye and like knocked Deep my shot. Contact lens out.
Yeah,
oh yeah. Oh, I obliterated the guy.
He did not fight with honor.
Obliterated him. No, and actually it's funny too, because he was also native anyways, so like whatever, it's not like it wasn't even lateral oppression, it was just like community infighting.
Oh, that was the other horrible thing too. My dad loved to talk about black on black crime. That was his favorite fucking dinner subject. Fucking terrible.
I mean, it happens, just like white on white crime, but right. You wouldn't call that white on white crime.
Right. It's just fucking stupid. And I think like, and I think I just kind of like want to put it out there that people who grow up, people who are white, okay, and they grow up in racist households, they don't always turn out the way that they're raised. Like they really don't. And I really think it's such a bullshit fucking excuse, when especially that you hear this from like slightly older people, maybe people in their 40s, 50s and up, right? Is, look, I don't hate you for being XYZ, but you have to understand, it's just how I was raised. Well, I was raised to basically be, I don't know, fucking join the KKK, all right? That's basically how I was fucking raised, and guess what? That's not the way I am.
You didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
So your argument
you turned out
is invalid.
Right, you turned out pretty good.
Right. So your argument is bullshit. So fuck you. And I think that's just where a lot of my anger comes from right now, is because we're these people that have these mentalities of like this middle of the road mentality really fucking pisses me off, of like, well, you have to understand that they're different from us. It's like, no, shut the fuck up. That's just really, I feel like that's my presidential like platform, you know, J for president, shut the fuck up. Like, just stop it. Knock it off.
Shut the fuck up, Karen. 24.
Exactly. Fucking Christ.
But like, yeah, let's segue to actually talking about the tower.
Yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit. What did you want to say about the tower?
Well, this is what the tower is about, though,
yeah,
right?
Honestly,
everything's
we've been talking
up.
About it the whole time, really.
And this is the secret about the tower, and we've been talking about it the whole time without talking about it directly. Mm-hmm. See, it's almost like a meta episode. We have those episodes where we come in and we're going to be like, here's the mythology behind it. So the tower is the major arcana 16, and it is equivalent to this path on the tree of life, and here is its equivalent in Kabbalah, and we'll give you like some breakdown or some shit. And other times we're just like, we're just going to accidentally or deliberately in some cases mm-hmm. embody the essence of that topic in our conversation. And the Tower card is the crumbling of everything that you were building up that you really thought you were going to keep yep. on. And I'm sure we have all had many towers hit in our lives and crumble. I can name many times Tower showed up. 2012, when I was a teenager, when my mom caught me doing magic and fucking threatened to send me to a psychiatrist when I was a kid, you know, a whole bunch of things. And like, you tower multiple times, right? And it's almost that kind of like magician power.
I think I've had about three or four major tower incidents in my life thus far.
I don't even want to count them because it's either I'll seem like I'm showing off or I'm a mess or a bit of both. So I'm just going to say enough.
And then sometimes I feel like I just have like a three-story building. You know, it's not quite a tower, but it's like, it's kind of sucks, but it's not that bad.
I mean, that's what this was this time. It was like a three-story building. I'd been in Toronto for 2 years. It wasn't like I had fucking been like salve coagula, e plubris, some shit, whatever here, you know, like... Yeah. I was very much like Toronto. But like, at the same time, I kind of really did meet some wonderful people that I am still in contact with. And I did kind of break through that first kind of like skeezy layer of Toronto. I met local legend homeless people, apparently. I ain't even going to say some of their names. Wow. But yeah, I met some wonderful people. And just like, that's what the tower is about. When shit hits the fan, when you knock over 3 out of 5 of your cups, when you catch your balls in your zipper, when you piss on an electric fence, or when you're going to go under an electric fence and your cousin says, hey, can you grab it for me? And you grab it and he says, ha, asshole. And you're like, ah, fuck, Nathan. You kind of like have to pick up from the ashes, right? You gotta keep going, right? And the tower card is like, sometimes you're left with nothing but the rubble, and sometimes you get nothing but like a stick and a brick, and then you're like, if I tie these two together, I have a hammer or a tomahawk, and I can get some shit done with that. And then you go from there, right? It's like picking up, it's like the phoenix, you know, man? And the tower's a bitch, man. Like, it sucks. Nobody wants to catch their balls in a zipper. Nobody like wants to have like their moon show up at the wrong time. Like, it happens. Yeah, nobody wants to like have a loved one pass away, right? Like, or move onto the street, or like have someone have to deal with COVID, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I can joke about those things because that's how you kind of get through it. That's how we always get through it, right?
Dark humor has been a part. Dark humor is just a part of humanity. I think it's probably one of the most human things that we have. I mean, look at the nursery rhymes that were created because of like the plague and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, we find ways to cope with really dark, horrible, heavy shit. And we always have.
Yeah. Maybe not even dark humor is always how we cope, but just humor in general, you know, like when we were transporting stuff at one point, like we were going in a group in car and we'd like poke our heads out the windows and make jokes to people about stuff about ourselves. And like, cause like we're riding in a car that didn't have air conditioning and we're like fanning the doors, like trying to get it to get AC going. And they're like, don't worry, this one muscle power to like the people outside, and they just look at us like we're crazy, but like it's, we're trying to like make people laugh and it's fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, what else are you gonna do when you're like sitting there trying to fan, like opening your door and closing it repeatedly really fast to get some air going in a vehicle when you're like driving down the street? You don't want to concern people, right? You have to like offer some kind of explanation.
Yeah, for real.
So, like, I don't know. Like, the humor is kind of what gets you through it. And whether that's a little bit dark or whether it's fart humor, literally just, like, fart humor.
Yeah, fart jokes are always just funny, no matter what the situation.
Or silly voices, like if I bust out Lawrence, if I bust out Lawrence, bud, you know you're gonna be in for a laugh, you know. Yeah, he came back a little bit. You just give Sophia a bit of time on the street, bam, that voice surgery, she cracked the nut, she backed down here, boy. And Lawrence, he can come back out for a little short visit every so often for you, even if I'm not quite the same.
You should do a fucking April Fool's episode, like a mini-sode.
I can't go that long on the Lawrence voice. It's actually really hard on my voice.
Aw. Maybe we'll just do a little...
But hey, kid, you know I'm here when you need me, right?
But we'll do a little one-minute rant.
Yeah, well, Lawrence is really gonna ask you to just shave your nutsack there, bud. Them pubes real good.
And you know, and I
think, yeah, anyways,
that's kind of like how it is with the towers. So like a lot of people focus on when people come across the concept of the tower or the card of the tower, they focus like it's a dark card. Like when you look at it, you're like, oh my God, it's like falling over. It's on fire.
Actually, you know, it's the third worst. Okay.
Yeah. It's up there. It's definitely up there. I mean, most people, I feel like if they don't know anything about tarot, like most people freak out about the death card. They're like, oh my God, you know, it's like, no, relax. It doesn't actually literally.
Death is more likely to mean that you're going to break up with your fucking girlfriend. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like I think, yeah, usually, you know, the tower is, I think the tower is slightly more ominous than the death card, but I also read tarot, so
never draw the death card ever.
I rarely do, actually. It's kind of interesting. I usually draw the Hierophant. That is the card that I often draw when I work with the Rider Waite.
Look at you, Demiurge.
I kind of wanted to read a little snippet from Byron Ballard's book about Tower Time, and if you haven't enjoyed this kind of ranty sort of episode, then I think you'll appreciate this book as well, and I'll leave, you know, obviously a link and stuff like that in the show notes to it. But she really talks about what Tower Time is and what we have to do. And so really the first thing that she talks about is this idea of going to ground. And so, you know, as things are collapsing and falling apart around us, you need to take root somewhere. You need to just get your roots in, dig your heels in, and you gotta be ready. And I think that's just one of the things, it's like one of the skills that is going to be the most important in our society going forward. Whether you're a magical practitioner or not, just you gotta dig your heels in somewhere. Not like stubbornly, like this is the rock I die on or whatever people say, but like just be prepared for some shit to go down. But the part that I kind of want to read here is she's talking about, like, I'll just kind of just start it. So she says, the visions of Tower Time have never been solely about the collapse, which I want to stress early on and return to throughout the first part of this book. This is not a gloom and doom scenario. I invite you to explore the next steps, the best step. As the tower falls, it is incumbent on all of us who can act to create what I have been calling circles on the ground. Active and well-thought-out alternatives to what we've come to know. Alternatives that work where you are, that include everyone, that take planet and people into consideration. And that is something that I have been kind of doing within my own circle without, even before I picked up this book and read it. So I think, like, these systems are so large and massive and oppressive. You know, like, me as one person, I can't just go up to the capitalist machine and turn it off, right? Like, I can't just, me as one person, it's such a big oppressive thing, right? That's not possible. But what I can do is I can learn skills that have been lost to us, like this idea of like growing your own food and like being in control of that part of your life, or being in control of where you purchase things, right? So like, yes, you're still participating in this idea of capitalism, but I am only going to purchase things from, you know, like I only want to purchase my clothes from, you know, people that use organic fabrics or something like that. I don't do that because I don't have the money to do that, but it's just that kind of idea. But the thing that I've really been focusing on is creating sort of like my own village, in a way, like my own people, your own family, your own circle, your own unit, your own system of individuals that are on the same wavelength as you in what goals you want to accomplish, if that makes any sense. So it's this idea of we need to retreat into smaller pockets so we have our support systems, but that doesn't necessarily mean like smaller pockets and exclude other pockets of people. It's just this idea that it's easier to manage ourselves in smaller groups that all coexist and support each other simultaneously. And that's the kind of system that at least I think would be really good to put in place during this transition time, during the time that all these systems are sort of falling apart, because you need something to fall back on. You need something for structure and support. And I think for me, that's kind of what's been the best for me. And I like that she kind of highlighted that in the book, because I was thinking along the same lines.
You know, that's exactly what I encountered when I was like living with that group on the street. We had like broken into a smaller number, and we were taking care of each other in such a much more intimate and real and manageable way that, like, I'm going to be really honest with you. When I was there, I started healing in ways I never dreamt I could. I called my dad on Father's Day this year, actually, and forgave him for everything he's ever done to me. No joke. And wow. I actually had my back feeling good again. It's been horrible since I've been back in the colonized land in the box house. But out there, it was... I could run again without even an issue, and my lungs were never heavy, and my body was never heavy, and my mind was not clouded, and my spirit wasn't bogged down. I was like alive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what she's describing there to a T. And it's so oddly magical to kind of hear that described in the after effect. And I don't want to like linger on that too long, but like, she's 100% correct. And it's not to say that like we don't go into society and interact with other cheap people, but like, it's this idea of forming circles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Violet used to talk about this a lot, getting like a community together. Like for her, she wanted a polycule with a bunch of like everybody having their own individual house, right? Imagine this, living with like 30, like however number you decide, like 10 to 30 people maybe would be too much for some people. It could be like 5 even, but you each have your own small house and you live on the same property.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about that.
That
and
is
like
literally my dream.
And like you and Joyce could stay in the same place if you wanted to, and like you could have some other friends, and like Scott could have a cottage out there, and Darian, and like that's like how you form little communities, right? And I've been talking about this for a long time, saying that my prediction of what's going to happen in the future, I was calling it, is the homestead revolution, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That it's not going to be fought with like a Molotov or brick or a gun or any of that stupid shit, but that people are just going to get tired of the city and the absolute inhumanity of it, and the expensive sense of living there and just move back to nature and actually start like living in a much more harmonious way. And I was talking to Tyler about, like, my friend earlier today, about how I'm making plans with a friend from the States who's going to come up here, and we're going to go hunting together, and I'm going to get my hunting license, and she's going to teach me how to butcher a deer, and not just field dress a deer and gut it, but like butcher it and keep the pelt. And I'm going to try to learn how to like utilize the whole animal sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, what I want to do is like take the sinew. I want to take the antlers. I want to take the deer skin and make stuff with it. I want to have like the bones, and I can have, I can sell bones to people if they want them and stuff. And like, you can sell every bit by bit off of that would normally go to like a butcher. And I can make this like really sustainable lifestyle for myself that I've been like pricing out and looking at stuff. Like, do you know how much the Hudson Bay Company sells like a coyote pelt blanket for?
Nah.
$4,000.
Holy moly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And those animals are just out there living to begin with. Like, they're just being hunted like ruthlessly by this shitty company, and then they like do that with it, right? When right, instead, like,
I'm just looking at, okay, so I've been growing this tomato plant, like cherry tomatoes, right? I just, mm-hmm. this tomato plant outside my house, it's got a shit ton of tomatoes. I think I spent maybe $5 on the, so I bought like a little plant, and then I planted it. I didn't grow it from a seed. So I bought this little plant, and I planted it, and it was, I think it was less than $5, honestly, for the plant. And mm-hmm. it has given me so many fucking tomatoes. Like, it's just, it blows my mind. And, you know, me, I'm very much an urban person. I never really had a very rural or sort of agrarian upbringing. And so this rocked my fucking world, because I was like, okay, so this plant...
Food literally grows on trees?
Not so much. It wasn't to that level. It was almost to that level, though. But, yeah, but, like, it just gave... It gave me so many goddamn tomatoes, and I was like, okay, there's a ton of tomatoes. Like, these same cherry tomatoes, they sell for like fucking $5, $6, $7 sometimes fucking dollars a little package.
Yep.
At the grocery store, when my under $5 plant continues to give me as many fucking tomatoes as I pretty much
mm-hmm.
well, it gives me more tomatoes actually than me and Joyce can eat, so we've been giving them away to people. And to top it all off, they are the most delicious fucking cherry tomatoes. They just have the most flavor.
Now you see, my friend, mm-hmm. welcome to the revolution.
Yeah.
And we will fight it with not a tomatoes bullet or a Molotov, but with seeds and love.
Yeah, and I'm here for it, and I'm ready for it. And I know mm-hmm. you were saying, you know, this kind of like maybe people leaving cities, but I just think with the amount of people that are out there, I don't know if that would be possible for everyone. So another sort of trend that I've kind of been like looking into on Instagram in particular is urban homesteading, and especially if you're lucky enough to have like a little patch of grass either out front or out back or wherever there's dirt, you can start growing shit. And it's just, it's empowering, and it really makes me feel like that's how we're going to, and I don't want to say win, it's not about winning, it's just about,
yeah, it is.
I don't know.
We don't even have to overcomplicate it. No, we can't. Certain things, we can make it simple. Yeah, we do want to win at the end of the day.
I suppose,
wanna
win. Yeah.
We want the earth to stay alive. We want the water to stay clean. We want the land to be free and be protected and not have to be owned. We want homeless people to be provided for and cared for, and every human being to have a place on the fucking planet. Yeah, that's winning. And yeah, it's what I want, and it's what I'm going for, and I'm not gonna take less, you know.
I think it's because I just associate like the word win with like, you know, I don't know, like greed. But I guess in a way, yeah, you're right. Like it is winning. Like, we want to win this unseen.
I want everyone to have a home and a place, right?
Yeah, like we want to win this invisible yet very visible war that has been raging for ever, you know, and it's just really coming to a head right now. And I think that's just kind of like the thought that I kind of want to leave this episode out on, because we are coming up on 2 hours, a little long. But I want everyone to start to ground themselves and see the people and the communities around them and see what they can do to start creating what Byron calls these circles on the ground. How do you construct a circle? And your circle could just be you. It could be you and another person. Like, it has to just start somewhere. But what can you do that will take just that little bit away from the gross systems that are currently in place? And for me, it's my fucking tomatoes right now. Like, I'm so, like, it just makes me so happy every time I eat a goddamn tomato from my tomato plant that I'm like, you know what, that's one less fucking cherry tomato that I bought in the grocery store, and it's more delicious than the one in the grocery store. So fuck you, grocery store.
For me, it's been getting to read up on Native culture. I've been lucky lately. My spirits have been extremely loud. Go figure, going and actually listening for once and doing what they tell you makes everything happen. Go figure. And I got some really good books, and I've been just studying, and I've met some really wonderful people, and like, doors just keep opening. And like, it's also kind of like stuff that I was putting off my whole life because it's scary. And they were just like, you know, we knew it was going to take you like 25 years. It's okay. We were patiently waiting. Can we do this now? Fine. Let's do this. Yeah. That's exactly what it's like right now. So I'm like literally spending every fucking day right now, studying, reading, journaling, taking notes, ordering my thoughts, like putting myself back together, trying to like figure out where I'm going. Like, that's kind of where I'm at, is I'm stitching up my wounds and preparing for the next stage of my life that's going to come, because things are going to be really different now. And nothing's going back to normal for anybody. Sorry, y'all. The veil got ripped down. We succeeded. The planets lined up and the underworld opened up. Magic is real. You cast a spell right now and it works really, really fucking well, to the point where you might even regret it. And I really actually got so overwhelmed by that I destroyed a lot of my magical artifacts because they were just too much for me to handle. I'm not even kidding. I actually cut a lot of my paintings and like got rid of shit. Like, it's been a fucking ride. So everybody, please stay safe, stay strong. Things are still going to be tough for a while. We are going to have to weather the storm together. Hopefully this podcast can be like a little bit of a beacon, you know, to other people, to set a little message out there that, hey, there's other people in the night who hear you, and we're fighting and casting together, and shit's gonna be okay. I really hope, you know. And if not, hey, I mean, we all die eventually.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned like the podcast and, you know, and everything like that, because I want to really, now that I'm really thinking about this concept of circles on the ground, I really want this podcast community to be something like that. Like, you know, I would love to see systems of like, oh, hey, you know, I make this salve and you make flying ointment and let's trade. And like, I would love to see like some sort of barter system, or just something, just some sort of like really thriving community in which we reach out and help each other. And I really think that we can achieve that. From most of the interactions that I've had, you know, with people messaging us directly, and just from seeing interactions in the groups, I think that this could really be a beautiful, thriving community. And I think it will. And the fact that it is, you know, it exists in this sort of like virtual kind of space, I think will help those who don't have the capacity to build those physical circles just yet, or maybe give them the confidence to do so. And so I kind of would like to hear from you all, whether you want to message us privately, send an email, whatever you want to do, post in our groups publicly. But I really would like to hear some ideas of how we can start to build a community from this. Like, I don't want... This isn't a YouTube channel to where it's like, oh my god, 5,000 followers, thank you so much. It's, I really could give a shit if we have 5,000 or 5 followers, but I just want those 5 or 5,000 followers to understand that this is a community and we are all in this together and we just need to be here for each other in this time of tower.
Yeah, and also, like, to all my introverts out there, I see you. It's okay.
Yeah.
You don't need to talk. It's, I understand that we do want to come together as a community, but it's okay, too, if you can't talk. We love you, too.
That is true. I mean, introverts are holding space for the rest of us, honestly. Introverts actually, yeah. Introverts and lurkers really do a really good job of holding space now that I'm really...
They're a special kind of magic. They literally just like sit there and give nothing but observance and like actual validity and response and sounding. And I can't explain how much someone just coming to observe and be there and like take part in something truly matters and how much even that is such an invaluable exchange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for listening, motherfuckers.
Yeah, for real. But I think we can wrap it up here. I think we've talked a lot on this. We will talk more.
Yeah,
on
definitely.
This for sure. I mean, this is just the way our world is going. We're gonna talk more about everything that's going on. But this was really nice, especially as one of our first, you know, recording sessions, really getting back together and getting back into the swing of things. And we wish you all well. Please reach out if there's anything that we could possibly help you with or guide you toward. We have a decent amount of knowledge about stuff and things, so reach out. And if you don't feel like reaching out, then definitely continue to do your introvert duty and hold space for the community, and that is incredible work as well. So for now, we're going to sign off, and we will see you in the next episode. You can find Witches Betwixt on the big three social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our handle is Witches Betwixt, all one word, on all three platforms. We all check each one, except Twitter, which is exclusively run by me, Jay, but feel free to message us on any of them, and we'll get back to you. If you want to add your post to our online community, use the hashtag WBTWXT. The links to our official Facebook group, Discord server, and website are in the show notes below.